Heirloom. I guess we should start from the beginning. I was born on November 2nd, 1986. I grew up in Burlingame, California, a city nestled in the Bay Area just south of San Francisco that smelled like roses and chocolate, divided between the affluent hills and the low-income part of town where we lived. It's called the flat part. Our house was by the railroad tracks and a sound wall that led to the freeway. We faced a car repair shop and could hear the almost constant noise of things being taken apart and put back together. On Christmas Eve, 1987, when I was a year old, the cops knocked on our door and took my mother, Annette, to the hospital for 14 days because she'd had a nervous breakdown. Some told me it was because she had called the cops saying my dad was attacking her with a knife. Others told me it was because she had attempted suicide. From that day forward, the world seemed to paint my mother as an unreliable source. A liar, even. Because no one could tell if what she was saying was true or not. The truth was that she was never a liar. My mother is one of the most honest people I've ever known. My mother is so honest, in fact, that she'll tell you about things that no one else can see or hear. She calls this her vivid imagination, and it's what enables her to be such a talented artist. Once as a kid, I asked her to draw me a bath. She'd put pen to paper, and without ever lifting the tip from the page, she drew and shaded a clawfoot bathtub. I thought she was magnificent. Between 1987 and 2003, there were 14 incident reports filed by Child Protective Services and led eventually to my younger sister and me being removed from the house. That was in 2003, just after I'd turned 17. I was emancipated and my six-year-old half-sister Maggie was placed into the foster system. The next year, I got into UC Berkeley, took out student loans, and was awarded some need-based scholarships so that I could attend. My life had been a case study in charity and gratitude. However, despite all these court cases and incidents with the authorities, nobody could tell us what was going on. Naomi and I had a theory that our mother was suffering from a disease called schizophrenia, which a quick Google search defines as a long-term mental disorder of a type involving a breakdown in the relation between thought, emotion, and behavior, leading to faulty perception, inappropriate actions and feelings, withdrawal from reality and personal relationships into fantasy and delusion, and a sense of mental fragmentation. Without treatment, schizophrenia spreads like a parasite through the mind, devouring reality completely and leaving behind the wake of a world perforated by invisible nightmares. But we didn't know all that yet. We just knew that Mom was unstable and irrational and just getting weirder and weirder. In the spring of 2007, I came home from a semester abroad in Japan to discover that my stepfather, David, had left my mother and that she was being evicted. They'd been married for 11 years. Maggie was their child, and after she'd been removed from the house 4 years earlier, David had tried to help Annette, we call the illness Annette and the happy memories Mom, get the medical care that she needed. But she wasn't interested. She had other things on her mind. There's nothing wrong with me. What we should be worried about are the urban pimps that live in the phone lines. There was nothing that David or any of us could do to get her into treatment. In the state of California, it's nearly impossible to get a loved one psychiatric treatment without their consent. And since her illness separated her reality from ours, she couldn't understand what all the fuss was about. Annette's disability meant that she hadn't worked in more than 10 years. David left her with enough money and savings to pay her rent for 4 months. I was 20 years old and working to keep myself in school. My older sister, Naomi, was 24 and working to live while paying off her own student loans. Neither of us could afford to keep Annette in the two-bedroom, one-bathroom house. Again, our mother's concerns were elsewhere. A minor housing issue was nothing compared to disabling the transmitter that the Catholic Church had implanted in a van that parked on her street, or getting back the $1.3 trillion that the government had stolen from her, money that was her birthright as designated by her English heritage. This meant that it was up to Naomi and me to move her out of the house. We found a residential hotel where she could stay for $640 a month. The room she had there was, well, it was literally a room with a shared bathroom down the hall. It was essentially a halfway house, or rather a halfway hotel. It was decided that I would find an additional job, my third, and that Naomi and I would split the rent. It was a solution that would not last long. By the time I graduated, Mom was homeless. Also, you could not fit 48 years of memories into a single room. There was simply nowhere for everything to go. There was barely anywhere for my mom to go. I should take a moment to tell you something. I really love my mom. When I was growing up, she was quirky and silly and fun and passionate. She loved history and mystery and art and magic and, oddly enough, miniature food-shaped erasers. Her illness has made her almost unrecognizable. But every now and then, she'll tell me that she's proud of me, and for a second, I think I can see the old her behind her glassy, reddened eyes.